WAKY News Magazine, normally heard at this time, has been canceled this morning. Instead, WAKY presents a special historical documentary, The Trial of Sue Mundy.
The Morning Star Ferry docked at 4th Street, where the crowd pressed to see the Confederate outlaw woman, the gorilla, Sue Mundy.
The most colorful era in the history of Kentucky may have been a brief period near the close of the Civil War. In a short span of time, which included the latter months of 1864 and the early months of 1865, irregular soldiers of fortune, guerrillas, waged their brand of warfare. It was during this time that the numbers of guerrillas operating in Kentucky and their activities reached a peak. Kentuckians must have thought they were being thrown back in time to the late Middle Ages. Youthful marauders, most often armed cap-a-pie from head to toe, and wearing butternut or blood-red-colored clothing, roamed about in small bands, terrorizing the populace. Some Confederate guerrillas disguised themselves as Federal troops and wore Union Army jackets. Many wore plumes in their hats, knee-high boots and battle sashes. They rode fine, fast horses taken wherever they found them. This is the story about one of those young men of infamy. We tell it not only because of its historical importance, but also because of its relevancy in our own time. This is the story of Marcellus Jerome Clark. It is the trial of Sue Mundy.
The Louisville Journal had printed stories of her killings and crimes against the Union soldiers, with no regard to places and times. It said Sue burned the depot at Midway, but at the time she was 60 miles away. It said Sue rode with Quantrill, though we'll never know. The paper lied and the witnesses died 100 years ago.
Marcellus Jerome Clark was born August 25th, 1844, in Simpson County, Kentucky. He was one of seven children of Hector and Mary Hale Clark. Before reaching puberty, Jerome became an orphan. Jerome and his brothers John and William lived with Mrs. Mary Tibbs at Beech Grove in McLean County after the deaths of their parents. John and William married great nieces of Mrs. Tibbs. They were Elizabeth and Serelda Lashbrook. Jerome lived with John and Elizabeth at Crow's Pond, Kentucky, when he was 15. Jerome was in love with another Lashbrook sister. Sarah Lashbrook was the same age as Jerome. On his 17th birthday, August 25, 1861, Jerome was mustered into the Confederate Army's 4th Infantry Regiment in Montgomery County, Tennessee. In February 1862, Marcellus Jerome Clark would endure the bitter taste of defeat. He and the other Confederates at Fort Donelson were forced to surrender to General Grant. A prisoner of war, Jerome was taken to an Indianapolis prison. In a short time, he escaped. Some reports say that upon his return to Kentucky, Jerome witnessed the blinding of his friend John Patterson in a Union County skirmish and decided then and there to become a guerrilla. This report is not generally accepted. September 4th, 1864, Greenville, Tennessee. Jerome Clark was commanding Castle's battalion together with the four guns. It was every piece of artillery under the command of Captain Clark's leader, General John Hunt Morgan. Clark had his guns trained on Greenville from the Jonesboro Road. Then the word came. John Hunt Morgan had been killed. In addition to his expertise as an artilleryman, Jerome Clark was a courier and reportedly one of the most reliable in the Confederate Army. 8 days after Morgan's death, Clark was in Bloomfield, Kentucky, reporting to Colonel Jack Allen. A Spencer County Kentuckian, Jack Allen was taken from the staff of General John C. Breckinridge in late August 1864 and sent to Kentucky from Morgan's Abingdon, Virginia headquarters. His assignment? To bring Confederate soldiers who had been engaged in guerrilla fighting back to their ranks. Now, Captain Marcellus Jerome Clark would assist him in the endeavor. Jerome soon teamed up with former orderly sergeant Samuel Oscar One Arm Berry. Born in Woodford County, Kentucky, Barry was a school teacher in Mercer County before throwing his lot with the rebel cause. And perhaps it was an incident October 7, 1864, at the Shaker Run Creek covered bridge in Mercer County that triggered reports of a girl gorilla operating in central Kentucky. Jerome Clark and One-Armed Barry halted the Nicholasville Harrodsburg stagecoach before it entered the bridge. Jerome demanded one of the horses in the stagecoach team be unhitched. It was. Jerome then leaped on the horse bareback and rode toward the bridge and back again, his dark brown shoulder-length hair flying in the wind. He told the driver of the stagecoach he could have the horse back. He said it was not a good one for riding. There are reports the driver of the stagecoach, Billy Wilkinson, and perhaps some of the passengers thought Jerome Clark was a female. A short time later, the small band of gorillas arrived in Harrodsburg. The citizens immediately cleared the streets. John Cardwell, cashier at the Harrodsburg Savings Institute, bolted the door. There was a conference in the street. Barry told former Governor Beriah McGoffin and other officials who had come to talk it over that all his group wanted was the guns stored in the bank. It is said that Barry told Governor McGoffin that Jerome Clark was the nephew of former gubernatorial candidate Beverly L. Clark. The comment by Barry was true. It was intended to convince McGoffin that all they wanted was the guns. McGoffin knew Beverly Clark. Before the psychology had a chance to work, however, a group of home guards rode into town, and Jerome, One-Armed Barry, and their comrades had to ride for their lives. In Louisville, the editor of the Louisville Journal newspaper, George Prentice, had been giving fits to the federal officers stationed in the city with his articles glorifying the exploits of the guerrillas. Prentice was pro-Union but disliked President Abraham Lincoln and did not agree with abolition. He was also disturbed over the fact that Louisville had been made a garrison for federal troops, and he did not like the way the military was handling things. He apparently found the rumors that a female gorilla was operating around Harrodsburg a perfect opportunity to make the Federals look funny. He called his character Sue Monday. Prentice would write one article after the other in which Sue Monday would be as elusive as the wind, always leaving Union forces in a cloud of her dust. Prentice used his pen to accuse Sue Monday of numerous war crimes. He kept up the ruse and referred to Jerome Clark as an outlaw woman, a she-devil who dresses in male attire or a terror, generally sporting a full Confederate uniform. There are several versions of where Prentice got the name Sue Monday to pin on Marcellus Jerome Clark. One version is that Prentice took the name from stories in his own paper about a free negress named Susanna Monday. The woman was said to have been noted for her cruelty and was in constant trouble with the authorities. Another report says a woman named Sue Monday lived near Bloomfield, Kentucky, and was a spy for John Hunt Morgan. Still another version of where the name came from says Jerome's comrades crowned him Queen of the May at a May Day festival and gave him the name Sue Monday. And there is a seldom heard story that Jerome found an unattended horse with side saddle in Bloomfield one day, leaped onto the horse, and rode up the street making feminine gestures to the delight of his men. Someone, it is said, came up with the name Sue Monday as a result of that ride. In 1874, John Newman Edwards wrote of Marcellus Jerome Clark, he was a quiet, gentle, soft-spoken dandy with his hair in love knots 6 inches long, a hand like a schoolgirl, and a waist like a woman. Sometimes he dressed also as a woman, hence the sobriquet of Sue. As a spy, he came and went as a wind that blew. So many were his shapes and disguises, so perfectly under control were his speech and bearing, that in some quarters his identity was denied, in others his sex was a matter of doubt. In all, those who did not fear him had an improbable idea, both of the man's prowess and personal appearance. Monday was a cool, brave, taciturn, experienced soldier, well acquainted with the country where he operated, and utterly fearless. In addition, he was also a thorough fatalist. His smooth, open, rosy-cheeked face made almost any disguise easy of encompassment. His iron nerve carried him easily through many self-imposed difficulties that, without it, extrication could not have come through a regiment of cavalry. When he fought savagely. Beneath an exterior, as effeminate as a woman of fashion, he carried the muscles of an athlete and the energy of a racer. His long hair in battle blew about as the mane of a horse. The dandy in a melee became a Cossack. In desperate emergencies, a giant. In the rare book 4 Years with Morgan and Forrest, Colonel Thomas Berry, said Sue Monday, rode like a Comanche Indian, was a cheerful companion, and always rode into battle singing. Prince Wells wrote on the back of a photograph of Marcellus Jerome Clark, now in Louisville's Filson Club, that he was a young man with a smooth face and often used a woman's riding costume as a disguise to get through the Yankee lines to secure information. It was said that he made up perfect as a woman. Wells continued, just before the Battle of Perryville, he entered the general store of my father, Jesse S. Wells, at Bloomfield, dressed as a woman. And although thousands of Yankees were occupying the town and surrounding country, he said he wanted a Yankee uniform. He was begged to leave, and when doing so, he swore he would have a Yankee uniform before he left town. This he secured by flirting with a soldier at the extreme outpost of the camp, and it was said he left the soldier wearing just what he came into the world in. Prince Wells said the photo of Jerome in the Filson Club was contributed by him. Jerome Clark gave it to his father in Bloomfield just prior to the Battle of Perryville.
When Pierce's Clark put paint on his lips and under his dress wore guns on both hips, he asked a Yankee soldier for his jacket to wear. He flirted and left the man standing there.
There are many stories about Sue Monday in central Kentucky. Some say he used to search house to house for his foes, many times riding his horse inside as soon as the doors were opened. The mysterious, shadowy figure known as Sue Monday would be accused of untold depredations by Louisville Journal editor George Prentice, but the relatively insignificant Confederate guerrilla, Marcellus Jerome Clark, would seldom merit a mention in the paper. Prentice attempted to make his readers believe they were two different people, and he continued to describe Sue Monday in feminine terms. The Journal's readers would see for themselves. The capture of Sue Monday would soon settle the issue. It was March 3rd, 1865. Jerome Clark, Henry Metcalf, Henry Magruder, and Sam Jones were riding along a Hancock County trail. They were under orders to report to Paris, Tennessee, and were heading south. Home guardsmen were waiting in ambush. 8 men opened fire on the 4 Confederates. Sam Jones was killed outright. Henry Magruder was wounded in the left lung. The 3 remaining riders managed to turn their mounts. Magruder urged Clark and Metcalf to get him to Dr. Lewis, who lived between Webster and Brandenburg. Arriving near the doctor's home, the trio took refuge in a tobacco barn on the James S. Cox farm. The doctor was brought to the barn. He treated Magruder's wound, but the Bullitt County guerrilla was too weak to travel. Clark and Metcalf resolved themselves to the task of caring for Magruder. Louisville's post commander, Colonel Daniel Dill, heard through an informer of the whereabouts of the 3 Confederates. Cyrus J. Wilson, a retired major of the 26th Kentucky Infantry, was summoned from LaRue County. Captain Lewis O. Marshall and Company B of the 30th Wisconsin would accompany Major Wilson to Brandenburg by steamboat. Then the contingent of 50 men would march to the barn. They arrived at daylight, March 11th, 1865. The barn was surrounded. A knock at the door went unanswered. A large boulder was smashed against the door. Then a dozen pistol shots rang out inside the barn, and bullets splintered through the weather-beaten door. At least 4 of the 30th Wisconsin fell wounded. Captain Marshall wanted to burn the barn, but Major Wilson sent the doctor in with a flag of truce. Wilson and Jerome Clark had a meeting. Jerome took out his smoking pipe. The major joined him in a smoke as they talked.
You must realize the situation is hopeless at this point, Monday. We have you surrounded. Your only chance of survival is surrender.
You'll kill me if I do.
No, I will not.
Your men will kill me.
I won't let them.
Where will you take me?
To Louisville.
You'll kill me there.
I have no doubt at all that you will be killed in Louisville, but it will give you a few more days to live.
Listen to me. I'm gonna die. There's no need to stay here. Surrender now while there's still time.
The voice was that of the wounded guerrilla, Henry Magruder. Clark's reply was quick.
I'm not ready to surrender.
You must realize the die is cast. We can reinforce this company while holding you at bay. You may wound or kill a few more of us, but we are too many. Realize the odds. They are heavy against you. There might be a chance in 1,000 or 1 in 10,000 of escape if you surrender. If you do not surrender, I see no chance for you at all.
Marcellus Jerome Clark made no effort to use the Major as a hostage and effect an escape. He honored the flag of truce under which the Major had entered the barn. As he removed his pistols and handed them to Major Wilson, he said,
"You have agreed I will not be killed here, but should expect to die in Louisville. I accept this, but I also expect to be treated as a prisoner of war until I arrive there."
"You have my word on that."
Then Henry Metcalf stepped forward and surrendered. The signal was given, and the troops moved lively toward the barn. Jerome's arms were tied behind his back. The same was done to Metcalf and Magruder. Then all three guerrillas were roped together on horses, one behind the other.
"Munday, this is rather hard treatment for a prisoner of war, but we are determined that you are not to get loose."
Crowds looked on as the group marched into Brandenburg that Sunday afternoon. They boarded the riverboat Morning Star. Clark and Metcalf were heavily chained. Magruder and the four Federals wounded with a gunfire at the barn were laid out on the floor of a cabin. It was said the floor was smeared with blood trickling from the wounded men. Monday morning, March 13th, 1865, the Morning Star docked at the 4th Street Wharf. Word spread like wildfire, and crowds surged toward the Louisville levee. Everyone wanted to get a look at Sue Munday. As the troops in the prisoner detail urged their horses and those of the three captives up the steep incline toward Main Street, all eyes were on Jerome Clark. Could this be Sue Munday? The female outlaw was male.
The Morning Star ferry docked at 4th Street, where a crowd pressed to see the Confederate outlaw woman, the gorilla, Sue Munday. The Louisville Journal had printed stories of her killings and crimes against the Union soldiers, with no regard to places and times.
Louisville Journal editor George Prentice, writing as if he'd been as fooled as his readers, described Jerome as a man of culture and gentlemanly refinement. But he would not admit Marcellus Jerome Clark and Sue Munday were the same. He now admitted only that Sue Munday was male. A competing paper, The Democrat, referred to the prisoner as Sue Munday, alias Jerome Clark. The captives were taken to the military prison at 10th and Broadway. The next morning, Jerome was moved to the post commander's headquarters in the old Huffman residence at 216 West Chestnut. A crowd gathered outside the headquarters. Perhaps Jerome watched the people as he sat in a front room, his wrists and ankles heavily shackled. Major General John M. Palmer, commander of the Military Department of Kentucky, ordered Judge Advocate William H. Coyle to begin the trial of Jerome Clark at once. General Palmer wrote an approval of the proceedings and findings and scheduled the hanging for Wednesday, March 15, 1865, at 4 o'clock p.m. The document was dated Monday, March 13, 1865. Jerome Clark would not be tried until the following day.
All stand. This is a military commission of the United States of America, Brigadier General Walter C. Whitaker presiding.
Be seated. This military commission, duly assigned by authority of Special Order Number 6, Paragraph 5, and sworn by Major General John M. Palmer, commanding the Military Department of Kentucky, is hereby called to order. The United States versus Jerome Clark, alias Sue Munday. Read the charges and specifications.
Charge first, being a guerrilla. Specification first. In this, that he, Jerome Clark, alias Sue Munday, being a citizen of the state of Kentucky and of the United States, and owing allegiance thereto, did within the lines occupied by the lawfully authorized military forces of the United States, unlawfully, and of his wrong, take up arms as a guerrilla, and did join, belong to, and act, and cooperate with guerrillas. He, the said Jerome Clark, alias Sue Munday, not then acting with or belonging to any lawfully authorized military force at war with the United States, and not being commanded thereto by any lawful civil or military authority. This is the counties of Nelson, Marion, Henry, and Woodford, state of Kentucky, during the months of September, October, November, and December 1864. Specification second. In this, that he, Jerome Clark, alias Sue Monday, a citizen of the state of Kentucky, did in said state of Kentucky, and within the lines of the regularly organized military forces of the United States, take up arms as a guerrilla, an outlaw in the county of Meade and the state of Kentucky, and did fire upon a detachment of the 30th Regiment, Wisconsin Volunteer Infantry, commanded by Captain Lewis O. Marshall, 30th Wisconsin Volunteer Infantry, and belonging to the regularly authorized and organized forces of the United States, who were then present in the discharge of their duty, and by reason of said shooting did wound Privates John G. White, John Robbins, and W.A. Wadsworth of said 30th Regiment, Wisconsin Volunteer Infantry. This order about the 11th day of March, 1865, in the county of Meade and the state of Kentucky.
Marcellus Jerome Clark, alias Sue Monday, how do you plead to the first specification?
Not guilty.
And to the second specification?
Not guilty.
And to the charge?
Not guilty.
The witnesses were required to withdraw and remain in waiting until called. The first to be summoned was Major Wilson, who had effected the capture of Jerome.
The United States calls Cyrus J. Wilson. Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Judge Advocate Coyle, the prosecutor, addressed the first question.
What is your name, occupation, and place of residence?
My name is Cyrus J. Wilson. I don't know what to say my occupation is right now, but I have been a soldier for the past 3 years.
In what capacity did you serve in the Army?
I served as a second lieutenant, captain, lieutenant colonel, and last as major of the 26th Kentucky Volunteer Infantry.
State what you know of the capture of the accused Jerome Clark, alias Sue Monday, on or about the 11th day of March, 1865, and give all the circumstances with it.
I was ordered by Major General Palmer on the evening of the 10th to take 50 men, proceed to Brandenburg, go out 10 miles from that place, and catch Magruder and Monday, if possible. Well, I went to Brandenburg, arriving there at 9 or half past 9 Saturday evening. I held a steamboat there for a half hour, keeping the passengers all on board. There were 55 men stationed at Brandenburg to picket the town. I then went out 10 miles on the Brandenburg Road with the 50 men I had taken from this place to Dr. Lewis's. I found the doctor who had been tending on Magruder, and having compelled him to tell of the whereabouts of Magruder, he acted as a guide. He took us to a tobacco barn in Meade County, belonging to a man by the name of Cox. This was about daybreak on Sunday morning, the 11th. Captain Marshall, with his men, surrounded the barn. They first knocked at the door. No answer was made. They then took a rock and knocked the door down. As the door fell, the men were fired upon by, I presume, Monday or Clark. There were 40 shots, I presume, fired into them, and they, the guerrillas, that is, returned the fire briskly. After my men had fired 35 or 40 shots, or, well, maybe, maybe not so many, they fell back and fired upon them occasionally, as they thought they could see them passing backwards and forwards before the door. The firing stopped at last. I sent in a flag of truce by Dr. Lewis, asking them to surrender. Well, Monday asked him who I was. He told him. He then asked him which regiment I belonged to. He told him the 26th Kentucky. He asked him who my colonel was. He told him. He asked how many men I had. I think I told him 150 men, but I am not certain. I think I told him I had 50 infantry and 100 cavalry. He then called for me. I met him at the door, or a few feet off. He had his pistol in his hand. I asked him to surrender. He said, Major, if I surrender to you, you will kill me. I told him I would not, at least then. He said, Your men will do it. I said, They would not kill him at that time. He said, Where will you take me? I answered, To Louisville. He said, You will kill me there. I told him I had no doubt of that at all, but I said it will give you a few more days to live. We came to take you, and we'll take you. Dead or alive. He invited me in. I went in. We took a smoke together. Magruder insisted upon his surrendering. I spoke to Magruder. He said he had been a bad boy, was going to die. I told him, well, I was sorry for him. He insisted upon Clark surrendering. Clark concluded that he would not surrender for a while. Well, I then told him I would give him 5 minutes to consider, and if he did not, I would open fire again. I still insisted upon his surrendering because, well, I wished to save the lives of my men. Magruder also insisted. Finally, I told him there might be a chance of his escape, that there was one chance in 1,000 or one in 10,000. He said there was some grounds to escape, and he believed he would surrender. I called for the captain.
Captain Marshall. Well, Clark agreed to surrender. We were to treat him as a prisoner of war until we came to Louisville. He said there was enough published against him to kill him, and he knew he would be killed at Louisville. I told him I had no doubt at all but that he would have but a few more days to live. Upon that ground, he surrendered. We talked it over there, Captain Marshall, Monday, or Clark, and myself. The men came. He was taken from there. When I was tying them, I tied their arms behind them and then tied them together. I told Monday, this is rather hard treatment for a prisoner of war, but we are determined that you are not to get loose. The understanding was that he was only to be treated as a prisoner of war until he came to Louisville, and the publication I have seen otherwise is false.
Louisville Journal editor George Prentice had stated Sue Monday and her or his Confederates did surrender as prisoners of war. It seemed Jerome Clark's back was to the wall no matter what testimony was given. He was already sentenced to hang. The order had been signed the day before the trial started, as indicated earlier, and the War Department's regulations for courts-martial of guerrillas required only an allegation of the times certain offenses were alleged to have occurred and the naming of the charges for convictions.
State fully all that was said by the accused Clark or Monday in relation to his having done enough to hang him.
He said there was enough against him to kill him. He did not say hang. I told him I had no doubt about that.
In what county did this happen?
In Meade County, Kentucky.
State what you know of certain men being wounded by the accused and the party he was with.
There were four of our men wounded. I do not know their names. They were strangers to me.
Of what regiment were they?
The 30th Wisconsin Infantry.
State who fired first, the party you were with or the accused and his party.
My impression has been that Monday fired first. Now, I may be mistaken.
Who do you mean by Monday?
I mean Clark. He was known there as Monday.
Your witness, sir.
Now the defense counsel appointed by the commission will cross-examine. Although, as you will notice, as the trial continues, the prosecutor or defense counsel may insert questions at will without objecting. In the official transcript of this trial, the defense counsel is never named. Attorneys for the defense in other guerrilla trials or courts-martial held in Louisville and elsewhere had been identified.
Did not the accused say, I have been charged with enough to hang or kill me, instead of, I have done enough?
I think not. I think he said just what I told you. He said some was true and some was false. And then he spoke of the publication made concerning his fooling Morgan. He said that that was all damn stuff. There was nothing of it about his having an introduction to Morgan as Sue Monday and asking and receiving from him a lieutenancy.
Is the accused now in the presence of the court, the person designated as Clark or Sue Monday?
Yes, sir.
You may step down, Major. Thank you.
When the trial of Sue Monday continues, Captain Lewis O. Marshall will take the stand.
Union troops found Sue in a merchant barn, caring for a friend on a Meade County farm. 50 men had been prepped, so they fired guns, of course. They were hauled to the ferry, tied horse to horse. When Sue stepped off the ferry, it caused quite a start. She was really a man. Marcellus Clark, the editor apprentice, had created the name for the long-haired she-devil who caused federal shame.
This has been part one of the trial of Sue Monday.
The preceding special program, The Trial of Sue Monday, was heard in this time period normally reserved for the WAKY News Magazine. This is the Lynn Broadcasting Corporation.